The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth myself. Well, here we sit together in the great Buddha Hall at Shasta Abbey, which I have to say is vibrating. The floor is vibrating. The radiators are vibrating, which is a very good reminder for us to be still in the midst of this particular condition and to not complain. For those who may be listening to this talk on audio file, I want to set Zazen meditation in context of our whole practice, which is rather like a three-legged stool, Zazen being one of the legs, and precepts and compassion being the other three legs. The stool, giving our practice stability and balance. Again, for those who are here and at a distance, it is good to read Dogen Zenji's Rules of the Meditation, as we call it, as spiritual reading, and absorb what it is pointing to in your entire body, and you don't read it for information. So it's spiritual reading is a different kind of reading. It's sitting still reading. Now this morning, I got my breakfast and was walking across the flower garden, and a monk was walking towards me. And she walked past a chair and said, "Nice chair." And I thought, "Yeah, nice chair, I'll sit down." So I did. And I composed myself. It was a moment of repose. And a small hummingbird perched on the leaf of a sunflower, still. It's quite rare to see a hummingbird in the stopped place, if you like. And so, and then after a moment or two, it flew into action and started to feed. And as I ate my breakfast, pausing every now and then, I noticed the vividness of the flowers. Really very vivid. The sight just sort of came to me. I was actually concentrating on eating my breakfast. And then somehow what was coming into my eyes, the flowers, the plants, popped into 3D, so that I had a sense of a depth between the front of the planting and towards the back where the sunflowers were waving in the blue sky. In former years, I would have thought, wow, is this it? Am I enlightened yet? But I've come to realize that such things are, whilst not normal, not unusual either. And it's to do with the activity of one's senses, in this case, my eyes, that I think as a consequence of training one's senses, my senses, to be less graspy after experience such as the one I just described, and maybe not as closed down when times are very overstimulated, and perhaps you would dim down your senses a little bit. So yes, here we are, sitting in the great Buddha Hall at Shasta Abbey. I'm facing the altar, which is the centre of the monastery. Centre of any monastery is the Buddha Hall. The Buddha is sitting still. It's showing us still uprightness, poised, balanced. As we are, in fact, the altar reminds us, the Buddha reminds us of what we aspire to. If there were actual live incense, smoke, the perfume would be permeating every corner of the hall, every crevice, as does the merit of our sitting, and as does our attention not be limited to anywhere, an awareness that is expansive and non-discriminatory. Years ago, there were once five little lights, red lights, strung up across the front of the altar, and they are in lotus blossoms. We call them the Skanda lights because that's indeed what they represented, the five Skandas. And within the tradition of Soto Zen, in Japan at least, and in our temples, this is a common part of the altar setup. The Skandas, to remind you, are... how can we put it? Component parts, a way of describing the self, of analyzing the self. all are embraced within our nature as Buddhas, our Buddha nature. The skandhas are form, sensation, thought, activity, and consciousness. At the beginning of the scripture of great wisdom, it speaks of great Kanzion seeing the five skandhas. In other words, we regard ourselves with compassion and acceptance. And there, those lights are invisible to the eye at the moment here, showing us that they are enlightened in their little lotus blossoms and are part of the focus of our endeavours, which is represented by the altar, the main altar. Focus, I might add, not in an over-focused kind of way, but a soft but attentive attention is probably the better word than focus. Again, in the scripture of great wisdom, it talks about, and it goes through the senses and also the five skandhas. It talks about no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, etc. You should know that it's talking about no separate eye, ear, nose, tongue. And the no is mu in Japanese, which is the first syllable of my name. Mu go. No, immaculate, empty, pure. Reverend Master Jiyu talk about pure. She translated it as pure, that which is beyond the opposites of pure and impure. So the Buddha reminds us about sitting still, poised upright. In the ordinary way of thinking, we have a past, a present, and a future. If you were to hold up a yardstick, a dressmaker's yardstick, or one that you found in the tool shed, on the left side, I would like to think that that is where we're born. This is a timeline. We're born, we live, and at the other end, we die. And we travel along our own particular timeline, our own particular unique timeline. And since it is so important to us to know where we are in life, we tend to have an idea of where on the timeline we are. Some of us see ourselves more over to the right-hand side, and others know themselves to be more on the left-hand side of the ruler, of the timeline. Where we place ourselves on the timeline is where we are right now. Birth and death, heaven and earth, are but opposites. One of the instructions, perhaps the main instruction for zazen is turn around the light at the pivot point and shine the light of compassion within. You could see that if you were to turn your ruler from the horizontal to the vertical, you would be stepping outside of the opposites of birth and death, linear time and linear space, and shining the light of compassion within. There is clearly, as you sit, a depth. Goodness, if there's not a depth because of the, at the present moment here and now, the earth is shaking and vibrating from the machinery out on the motorway or freeway on I-5. But there's another kind of depth to our sitting that is fairly hard to put into words, but to know that there is something that which is deeper, has a depth and a height too, an upwards movement within one's body and mind. We talk about looking up, and that's what I'm referring to. I have another analogy for meditation. When we sit down, we deliberately decide for ourselves that we are not going to go into deliberate thought. We have stopped running along our timeline, and we are sitting still. This is not easy, since we are, as human beings, poised for action, just as the bird was poised for action. So stopping does not mean pressing the pause button. Or if you in a car and you come to a stop sign, you're not going to do a rolling stop. You're going to stop, even if there's nobody around to notice. Poised and alert to start off when move off, drive on. When it's safe to do so, one is alert. Just as with sitting now, you are alert, you are awake. However, it would be rare to actually put the park brake on. So we're not in park, so to speak. We're poised with the potential for action. Neither over-focused, you might say, on anything in particular, or under-focused and drifting off to sleep, which is easy to do when you're tired. Years ago, Reverend Master was asked by one of the lay ministers, why have we still got all the instructions for sitting cross-legged in Rules for Meditation? And she said, oh, right, well, cut it out then. Which, from that time on, we did cut out the instructions for sitting with our legs twirled up, as she would say, like a pretzel. But there is purpose, and there is purpose in, you might say, disabling your legs, because they are the means by which you get about. And when they're folded up, or as mine are, my feet are resting on the floor, and my sitting bones are on the cushion beneath me, my arms are also brought round in front, similarly disarming my arms from reaching out unless I deliberately decide to. So we are set up to stop. But as I say, not to go into park, because we are moving, even if unconsciously. Our bodies are doing their thing of breathing, digesting, making micro movements. In Japan, they will say that Zazen is the lotus posture. I think it's saying that Zazen is stopping, ceasing, refraining. Our nose, which is in the center of our face, it is said, is in line with our navel. And ears are in line with the shoulders. Some instructions say that the ears are on a horizontal line with each other, and the shoulders are on a horizontal line with each other, thus talking about not tilting your head from side to side or raising a shoulder above the other one. Again, this is not something that you are trying to do. It is actually giving you these instructions that I've just spoken. Nose in line with the navel on the vertical plane. Ears and shoulders are on the horizontal plane. Are giving you coordinates of where you are in space. You have an up, you have a down, and you have a side to one side and a side to the other. And to complete this mind's eye configuration of your physicality, we have the circulating of the breath, which the instruction says to raise the breath on the in-breath and follow the breath up the back of you, which is behind you, up your back, up your neck, over your skull to the top of your head, and allowing that breath, following up with your mind's eye, to come down the front. Fall down the front. We are moving, we are three, operating as three-dimensional beings, and again, it is good to know where we are. We'll have an idea of where we are in space. In sitting, it's easier than when walking about. So there we are. Shining the light of compassion within, turning our attention from its customary field, you might say, a field of awareness that extends out in all directions, but most specifically what's in front of us, what we're doing. We're turning our attention, our field of attention, inwards, allowing our senses to be receptive, but not to reach out and grab. Allowing all our senses to be receptive, to not grasp after sensations, feelings, emotions, and not to reject. The mind of the opposites that likes to travel in the opposites. Here we can know that which lies both beyond and within the opposites. Picking and choosing, liking and not liking. Like and dislike, for me, come down to practicalities very often. And sometimes, of course, like and dislike are quite personal. And that's fine too, actually. Let's sit quietly for a moment and think of those coordinates that I gave you. Set yourself up and notice when you take your breaths that you expand slightly, particularly at your joints. Even your head will extend and expand upwards. So in closing, I'd like you to know that the go of mugo means karma or action, activity, empty action, immaculate karma, something that I aspire to both live and appreciate and understand deeply. In fact, the meaning emerges. And I have to say the meaning of sitting emerges of itself. As the monk said the other day when I said, "Oh, what's to say about meditation?" And he said, "Not much." Meditation happens when you stop doing everything else. Meditation in action happens when you stop doing everything else. In short, grasping after experience, grasping it being the operative word, or all the intellectual shenanigans that we get up to, not to decry our shenanigans, as long as we know what they are. as we walk on, or as we sit on, many of you I know have been meditating for many, many years, and you may wonder, and why do I continue? And you may not realize that distinctions between near and far, of beginning and end, are lost sight of, and that the very simple act of just sitting, balanced and poised, brings you to your humanness in a, you might say, an enhanced way. There's a phrase, isn't it? Enhanced, a word, that you may not notice so much. Just like when in the very end it talks about, do not doubt the true dragon, meaning the basic truth is here now and available and is experienced through our senses. In one translation I read, it talks about everydayness, and if anybody is looking for something special to happen whilst you sit, then and you're disappointed with everydayness, be content with that, I'd say. And sometimes, like today for me, the sense is clear, and the obvious manifests. I have to say, what I describe was no great shakes in the scheme of things. But if you find yourself smiling wryly, or laughing out loud, or maybe laughing and crying quietly to yourself, it's because the everydayness of the truth, when you hadn't noticed it, and then when you do, is basically really funny that you had missed that and have woken up to that luminous, transparent vibe. I was going to say vibrating. And in a sense, yes, vibrating with light and life. In either case, whatever you might realize, return to just sitting and place your experiences, good, bad and indifferent, on the altar of your heart. And as it says at the end of the scripture of great wisdom, going, going, going on beyond, always going on beyond. And as Reverend Master would say, always being Buddha. Gosh, she said, that really should be being, not becoming. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.